Karen Lyle of Salesport Talk, and I checked in with Tom Slingsby and Jimmy Spittle just before the Range Rover France Sale GP in Saint-Tropez. Red Bull Formula One car drivers Max Verstappen and Sergio Perez joined Team USA's Jimmy Spittle on his F50 for a race against Team Australia's Tom Slingsby. Here is Tom Slingsby.
So we're here today, and Oracle Red Bull Racing have joined us here in Saint-Tropez for our next event in Sale GP. From what I hear, Oracle Red Bull Racing are keen to come and have a look at our boats, and these are the most technologically driven sports that we have, and they're keen to come and check out our boats, which it's pretty exciting for us to have these legends come and see what we do.
Tom, do you think there are similarities between SailGP's F50 sailboats and the Formula One race cars?
I think there are a lot of similarities between SailGP and the F1. It's obviously they're the fastest cars on land, the fastest land-going vessels, and then we've got the fastest sea-going vessels, and we're always trying to push the boundaries of our sport, and we're going faster than we've ever gone before in sailing, and obviously the F1 is too. So it's exciting to have a bit of a collaboration between the two sports, and for us to have these guys here, it's pretty cool.
After a seemingly unbeatable string of wins, Team Australia lost the last race to Team New Zealand. Tom, what are your plans for Saint-Tropez?
So far this season, we're on top of the table. We've got a nice four-point buffer over New Zealand. We started off great this season, and we've slowly been, probably our results have been dropping a little. We really need to right the ship and stop the flow there. We need to have a good result here and get back up on that podium. And so we're really looking forward to Saint-Tropez to try to get a good result.
Now to Jimmy Spittle of Team USA.
I mean, it's pretty cool that we're able to take these high-level athletes and throw them on the boat and to actually go and push it in a race. You know, that's pretty rare. So I think it's exciting for both teams, but it also gives us credibility because it'll be fascinating to see what two guys that race, you know, the fastest cars in the world, and now jump on the water and get their reactions and what the sensations are like. You know, are there similarities between F1 cars and F50s? You know, these are highly data-driven boats. Their cars are data-driven. So, yeah, it'll be a fascinating day and a really enjoyable one, I'm sure.
Jimmy, is your team prepared to win this race?
Yeah, look, we've come out with a brand new lineup. You know, we've added depth to our roster this season. We finished last season on the podium, which we were glad to do. It's been a bit of a tough start of the season for us, but we're slowly chipping away, and we certainly hope Saint-Tropez will be the event to get us into a podium race.
Well, Jimmy Spittle's teamwork was rewarded, and the United States claimed the first ever event victory, beating New Zealand and Great Britain in the Saint-Tropez final. Congratulations to Team USA. This is Karen Lyle of Sailsport Talk.
All right, thanks, Chris. Welcome back to the show. Rick Tittle with you. Christopher Cross and I are on a pretty friendly basis. SailsportTalk.com, 9:40 a.m. Pacific time on Tuesdays, as always, with Karen Lyle. How are we doing, Karen?
We are doing great, and I believe we have a very, very interesting guest who's been gracious enough to come visit us right before our doctor's appointment.
All right, Andy Schwenk joins us, the winner of his division on an Express 37 in the July Pack Cup race. But Andy, welcome to the show. There was a situation where you had to be medevaced. Could you tell us a little bit more, please?
Yeah, it was actually on the return race. Thanks for having me on the show today. And I was delivering my boat back from Hawaii with three other men on board, and my ankle started to feel funny after the first day or two, and by the fourth or fifth day, the skin was falling off in pieces, and we ended up having to call the Coast Guard, and they arranged for, it was actually the Air National Guard that eventually got involved and took me home on a chopper.
Was that scurvy?
I wish it was that easy. We probably could have found a lime if we had to.
What was it?
Andy, this flesh-eating bacteria that got to you, tell us for a moment. I mean, you've had 54 trips, in Pack Cup and, you know, going from here to Hawaii and have all kinds of sailing experience under your belt, as it were. Did you ever expect to have some little cut on your foot cause such a dramatic result.
No, that was the whole thing. I've done that trip across between the West Coast and Hawaii 54 times on all kinds of different boats, and always had every kind of hassle, medical to mechanical, but we've always been able to deal with it. I've never had to call the Coast Guard. In this case, during the race over, I nicked my shin on a fair lead, and that open wound in Hawaii got infected, and it's called necrotitis fasciitis, but it turned out to be a strep A flesh-eating bacteria, which apparently you can get in locker rooms and swimming pools. So not sure where I picked it up. And I probably was cooking away in my ankle before I ever left the beach, but it didn't get bad enough until we were maybe 800 miles offshore that we realized we had a problem.
Well, so what happens in that situation then? I mean, there's nothing topical. You can't go into a Walgreens and get it checked out. So what was the prognosis for that point on?
Well, the tricky thing was we didn't know what it was. We actually didn't know what it was until we got back to the hospital almost a week later. But, from the appearance of it, they were thinking it could have been a spider bite or we weren't able to send a picture with the technology we had on board to the Coast Guard. All they could deal with was our descriptions of it. And as it turned out, it wasn't. There are types of antibiotics that'll take it down, but they're not the kind that you would normally have in a med kit that you could take orally. And in this case, it was a penicillin. It took 3 weeks in the hospital to knock down the infection before they could do the skin grafts.
Andy, you're sitting here on your boat, and describe for us the conditions of the sea. And because I think you went from your boat to a Taiwanese freighter that rescued you, and you left your crew behind. So tell us that conditions and your decision to go forward and leave the boat.
Yeah, so once we contacted the Coast Guard, they suggested that we send off our EPIRB, which is Emergency Position Indicating Radio Beacon. But I didn't want to do that because once we turned it on, there was no way to shut it off. And I knew my crew still had another 1,200 miles of ocean to cross. So the Coast Guard was willing to assume or act as if we had set off our EPIRB, even though we never did. And they diverted a tanker that was in the area. And we never had direct communication with the tanker. We could talk to the Coast Guard. The Coast Guard could talk to the tanker, but due to mostly a language barrier. But we just sailed up on the lee side. We had just a storm jib up to keep the boat from waving around. It was maybe 20 knots of wind, about 6-foot waves. And so we came up next to the tanker, and they were throwing lines down from the deck. So I took one of the lines and wrapped it twice around under my armpits and swung across Tarzan style over to the tanker, and they had a ladder there. They hauled me up. I kind of half climbed the ladder, and they half hauled me up and took me into their medical suite on the tanker. And then later the next day, the Air National Guard dropped in two parajumpers with medical equipment, and they got on board and they rode with me for 2 days on the tanker till we got close enough to the coast that the choppers could come and pick us all up.
Were you tempted to go, oh?
Yeah, it was kind of like that. It was nighttime, but if they got me up to the deck of the tanker and looking over my shoulder, at the stern light, we got the name on the transom of the boat, and see the boat sailing over the horizon. I was like, there goes my boat, there goes my crew. Pretty intense moment.
Couple more questions for our guest, Andy Schwenk. So how does that happen when you leave the boat? Do you tell someone else you're the skipper now? Is it assumed? How does that all work?
From the time the Coast Guard said the tanker was on the way till the time I hopped off the boat was probably about 3 hours. I had to debrief with the crew, and we reviewed where all the safety equipment was and all the navigational equipment, all the stuff that we had reviewed before we left the beach. just to make sure they know where the fire extinguishers and through hole plugs, things like this.
Andy, did the crew make it back safely? And do you want to give any shout outs to your crew by name?
But each one, one guy kind of took a role as communications. One guy kind of took the role as sailing master, and then the oldest guy on board was probably the pseudo captain. Although I don't think he ever pushed anybody around or anything like a good captain would.
Andy, when you went on the helicopter for your trip to Stanford from the Taiwanese tanker, what was that trip like? Were you able to see, I understand they had the fuel in process because it was a long trip?
Yeah, so the chopper had an extra fuel tank in the passenger area. So the passenger area was probably maybe the size of a front seat of your typical car. And so I was there with the two PJs, and then we actually, they had refueled the chopper on the way out to get to the tanker. And then on the way in, we actually refueled again, where an airplane flies in front of you and it drags a hose off its wing. And on the end of the hose is a little parachute to hold the hose steady-ish. And then the chopper comes up, it has a probe on the nose of the chopper, it sticks into that hose. In fact, there's a movie out called The Perfect Storm that has a pretty good part where they show that in-air refueling process. But, yeah, when they took us off the tanker, it was just with the sling. There was no room in the chopper for a gurney, although I didn't. It was just a sling, like a typical life sling, like a boat would have. And they had me in a sling, and then the other PJ came around me. I had his legs around my arms, so I couldn't slip out. And I kind of had my face in his belly.
So what would be the lesson that you've learned? Is there anything you can take on board now if that happens again, or is it just one of those things?
Yeah, there's lots of lessons. Probably the biggest one is, before you push off from the beach, really look at yourself and look at your crew and say, hey, are we all healthy here? Has anybody got toothache? Has anybody got a sore leg or anything like this? Because in honesty, my leg probably already was infected. And, in the process of refueling the boat and getting groceries, I was so distracted with those items, I wasn't really thinking about my own personal health. So I think doing a personal health check last thing before you shove off and say, hey, are we all really ready for 2 or 3 weeks out on the ocean? And then, it's all the people you're with. Make damn certain that if you're going to spend 2 or 3 weeks out on a boat, you've got crew and you pick them like I do that can take care of you and take care of themselves if the worst does happen. Each person needs to be ready to step up if they're needed.
Andy, I'm so glad that you were able to make it okay. And are you going to be able to keep your leg and your foot? Because that was quite a bit of flesh and muscle and everything else that was missing because of that flesh eating bacteria on your leg.
Yeah, so I'm going to be all right. It's just a long healing process. Being that it's a lower leg injury and I'm 57 years old, I don't heal up as quickly as I would at 30 years ago. But the long-term prognosis is I'll be back out there and hopefully Spindrift has signed up to do Big Boat Series this weekend with a guest skipper, and hopefully they'll have a lot of fun and do real well this weekend too.
All right, and thank you very much. That's Andy Schwenk in Heal Up, and thanks for joining us on the show.
Thank you guys very much, and excellent program, and thanks for having me on.
Thanks. And
Thank you, Andy.
Karen, we have a couple minutes. I watched that that Untold documentary on Netflix last night about the America's Cup in 1983 and getting a look at just how stodgy and smug and exclusive that New York Yacht Club is there on West 44th, and I know you were in there. Have you seen that documentary yet?
I just was sent links to that with an invitation to watch, and I'm going to be watching it tonight. So it looks like a great documentary, and Yeah, the fact is that I don't think the New York Yacht Club is stodgy. It has all of that old, you know, history and look, but the people are just, you know, fresh and excited about sailing and what they're doing, and you know, it's a bunch of sailors. So sailors really are fun people to hang out with.
Yeah, well, I met in 1983. By the way, I don't want to give it away, but we lost.
I know. And then we had our comeback in San Francisco, which I got to see in person. And you, did you get to see that too?
Well, I was here. I couldn't see anything because they were out on the water, but I know it happened, so yeah.
Yeah, I was out on the water. It was exciting. Such an exciting race. And we have the next one coming up, and already the spies are out looking for what's happening, and now they have a new system for spies where the spies, there's one spy team assigned to each locale where a team is preparing their design for their boat. So we'll kind of see what the reports are as these boats develop.
All right, you can find out everything going on at sailsporttalk.com. Karen Lyle, once again, thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Rick. Always good to be with you.
All right, I'm Rick Tittle. We'll take a break, and we will come on back on Sports Byline.